Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a huge role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at RocketMortgage.com/NSS.
Using eye-tracking VR to detect concussions, Amazon's Fire TV Cube, and smart home tips. Live from the Twit Studios in Petaluma, California, it's the new screensavers.
Episode 162 for Saturday, June 23rd, 2018. I'm Leo Laborte.
And I'm Florence Ion.
Hi, Florence.
Hi, Leo.
Great to see you. I love those earrings.
Thank you. They were a gift.
They're kooky.
Thank you for my friend.
And cute. Yes. Florence is, of course, one of the hosts of All About Android every Tuesday.
And soon, Know How.
Tell everybody. This is exciting.
Megan Maroney and I are doing a show together, which is very exciting. We'll be doing a season of Know How all about the Internet of Things and smart stuff in your house starting July 5th. So join us the day after the great Independence Day of our country, the United States.
There's the promo shot.
Yes.
That's hysterical.
Cheersing with our smart speaker of choice.
Ah. Well, speaking of smart speakers, we're going to talk a little bit about this one. This is the Amazon Fire TV Cube. It just came. It arrived a couple of days ago. Everybody's been getting theirs. It is an interesting device. Is it a Fire TV duct taped to an Amazon Echo, or is it really the dream of a hands-free home theater? My review coming up.
Looking forward to it.
Yes. And you have something very interesting coming up.
Yes, that's right.
It's right there. It's on the... There it is, right there.
Yes, yes. Same thing. Eye tracking that helps doctors diagnose concussions.
You just did this. You're going to do it again?
In under 60 seconds. Yes, I'm going to do it again.
I'm happy to say Florence is not concussed
I'm not concussed.
But maybe later. Who knows? This is actually really cool. It's already been used in Pac-12. Our Golden State Warriors use it to detect concussions and fatigue. And good news, you're neither concussed nor fatigued.
I was a little worried I'd come off as fatigued. So.
This is going to be kind of fun. The GDPR is in effect. Privacy is a concern. If you want to adjust your online privacy settings, Megan Maroney will show you how to do so on some of the more popular sites in just a little bit.
And we've got some smart home questions in the mailbag and in the call for help.
Yes, and so you're the expert. I'm going to let you do the answer because I don't know the answer to this at all. I'll be listening with interest. Also, Google has a new podcast app. I know you talked about it on All About Android. Jason Howell, you're not as excited about this as I am.
I'm still on the fence about it.
Jason Howell will have his review of the new Google podcast app for Android. But first, the big news stories of the day, and I think the biggest one, which broke on Friday, was right before, coincidentally, I started my interview on Triangulation. I hope you saw it with Phil Zimmerman, who is, of course, the Internet Hall of Famer, created PGP, Pretty Good Privacy. He's a privacy advocate. He was very pleased to hear that the Supreme Court ruled that the government does, in fact, have to have a warrant to get location information from your cell phone. That is huge. Up to now, it's been considered a pen register item. It is an item that the law enforcement doesn't need permission to get it. Actually, all the carriers had portals set up that law enforcement, for a small fee, could go and say, where was Florence Ion?
For a small fee.
On the night of June 12th, 1982.
And wasn't here yet. Did not exist
yet. Did not have
yet.
A phone. Did not exist.
I was not in existence.
She was nowhere to be found.
Nope.
Which sounds criminal to me. Where were you hiding?
I was not even an idea yet.
The case was actually a guy. It's kind of an interesting case. The police got cell phone records for 127 days of this guy. He was accused of a series of Radio Shack robberies. Why you would rob Radio Shack, I don't know. But anyway,
back in the day, it was the bounty.
But But they convicted him on the basis of the fact that he was, according to his cell phone, at each of the locations at the time of the robbery, and the jury considered that sufficient evidence to convict him. He appealed all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has not overturned the conviction. They're going to send that back to the lower court. But they did say in a very close 5-4 decision that law enforcement does need a warrant to get this information. That, I think, is a huge deal. They also ruled something that I think you don't like. They said that Amazon and other online retailers do have to collect sales tax on their online sales. You don't like that.
Well, I don't like it because it's more money.
You're a cheapskate.
I mean...
But this is... I kind of think this isn't so bad because... I feel bad for brick-and-mortar stores that are required to collect sales tax.
That is a very fair point. There are brick-and-mortars that I do try to support through online retailing.
Precisely.
So, yes, you're right. I should support them. But I'm thinking more of, like, the Amazons of the world. And
well, why shouldn't Amazon? Now, Amazon, by the way, does collect sales tax on stuff they sell directly.
Yes.
But about half of the online sales on Amazon are through the marketplace items, third parties. And they don't collect that. They expect the third parties to collect it. Or, as it has been for years in this state, and I bet you don't do this, but I'm not going to ask you, but the way California did it is when you file your state income tax, they say, did you make any purchases and not, was sales tax not collected? If not, write it down and give us the money. And so you're legally required to pay sales tax whether the retailer collects it or not. But I bet you most people... just ignore that.
There's a lot of people out there right now who are scrambling to figure out how much stuff they've bought online this year and what they owe the California government.
I never.
Fix those roads. Send in your sales tax, please.
So I kind of prefer that the retailer collects the sales tax. That's a convenience for me. And I think
point.
It levels the playing field. The argument is, and people are making that argument again today, that if you're a small internet startup, this gives you a little boost. But it gives you a boost at the expense of the local retailers. And I think nowadays we kind of want to support them. Right?
Small Business Saturdays.
Yeah. I'm glad. I think this is an appropriate decision. I don't have a problem at all. Have you ever been to VidCon?
No, I have not. But I have been seeing everybody there on Instagram and Snapchat these last couple of days.
It is like Mecca now for YouTube
Everybody's
stars.
Everybody's there and for journalists as well. There's a lot of journalists who are now covering YouTube and YouTube influencers and just the whole like entertainment world that's come out of just YouTube.
They're the new superstars, these VidCon.
They're the new Hollywood, really.
Yeah,
when you
really,
think about
they
it.
Are.
Yeah.
I've never heard of any of them.
Me
but
either.
I'm the old
but
Hollywood,
the teenagers, so. But my teenage cousins all know about it.
Sure they do. Yeah. Lily Pons. Everybody's a.
No
ooh,
idea.
Huge. Huge.
Who that is.
The only one I know is I, Justine. I know Marquez Brownlee. Yeah, There's a few people.
They've been around for a long time.
Yeah, but the new young crop, you know, the Logan Pauls of the world. In any event, YouTube has decided to support them a little bit better. They announced at VidCon that they are going to offer subscriptions for creators. So a creator could charge $4.99 a month to watch their stuff and get. They have additional features that they would get, channel memberships, unique badges and custom feeds and things like that. I think that's great. They can also offer merchandise. This is an interesting point because it dodges the other point, which is that YouTube doesn't really give the creators back a big percentage of the money YouTube makes on them, right?
Right.
So we don't know, and YouTube's never said how much they take of the advertising dollar.
Right, right.
But it's probably a pretty fair chunk of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of complaints, grumblings, that sort of thing, just about the way YouTube has been paying out creators.
And Facebook took advantage of this by saying, hey, come over here, we'll pay you more, and so forth. So I think this is, in a way, it's kind of ironic. YouTube saying, well, we're not going to pay you more, but if you want to charge your fans... be our guest. My experience has been, and I bet you this will end up being the experience of a lot of these people, people aren't going to pay $5 a month.
Oh, they will.
You think?
Oh, they will.
To watch Lily do her
absolutely.
Makeup?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. Because we're living in a gig economy now. And I'm learning this too as a freelance creator or freelance journalist, is that you can monetize anything as long as you've got a website that lets you do it. People sometimes say, hey, send $20 over to Venmo and I'll put you on a list and that, you know, I'll unlock some content for you or... give me money to my Patreon to help sustain me monthly. And so this is just an easier way. And they kind of already started it with Super Chat.
Do you have a Patreon channel?
I do not.
Have you been tempted? Have you thought about it?
Not quite there yet.
See, I feel like we're kind of old school. This is old media, right? Where you have advertising supported and that kind of thing. And maybe this is old hat. Maybe the future is.
And that's what I was trained on in school. And now I'm in this new world where you make money in a much different way.
And you're just a kid. That's the funny thing. I mean, I grew up
in the old school.
I do sometimes
feel like just a kid.
Well, I look at my son, who's 23, who really is a kid.
Yeah.
And he wants to be a YouTube star.
Yeah.
You know? He's not looking to get on Channel 5. He's not looking to get a TV show with a network. He's looking to be a YouTube star.
I would still love to be on Channel 5. So Channel 5, call me.
Call me. Call me.
Please. Right here.
This is kind of a sad story, but I think I probably should bring this up. You know, when in Tempe, Arizona, when the Uber self-driving vehicle killed a pedestrian, great tragedy. And there was some question, is this Uber's fault and so forth? They almost immediately distributed video of the safety driver. There was a woman at the wheel, but she was not driving, not paying much attention. She kept looking down. Remember that? Looking down on her phone. Now we know what she was looking at.
Gilmore Girls.
She was what?
Sorry. Gilmore Girls. No, she was looking at Hulu. We don't know what she was really watching.
She was watching The Voice.
She was literally watching The Voice. Wow.
The interesting thing is how nothing you do now is a secret.
No.
So, obviously, the Tempe Police Department went to Hulu, said, we know this woman was streaming.
Wow.
What was she watching? And they know! She was, for 7 of the 22 minutes preceding the collision, she appeared, according to the police, quote, to react and show a smirk or laugh at various points during the time she's looking down, when we now know she was laughing at some lousy singer on YouTube. It's a tragedy, of course.
It is.
A homeless woman hit by the car. Uber, which, and we should mention, has been a sponsor in the past on some of our shows. Uber has stopped doing self-driving vehicles in Arizona. But self-driving vehicles are still coming. And I think we should point out that whatever mistakes were made, you know, it's not a big story when a human driver hits a pedestrian, which happens all the time, every day. There are 1 million auto deaths a year worldwide. 1 million.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, I think in the long run, the lessons learned from this, don't watch The Voice if you're a safety driver. But ultimately, these cars will be safer. And I still think we should keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, just don't watch Hulu behind the wheel.
Just you know what? When my Tesla's driving, I got death grip. And because I've been reading the stories about how sometimes they plow into side, you know, you're not supposed to let this thing, it's not at level 4, you're not supposed to let it drive.
You live in a windy place.
And I live in a
lot of winds around here.
Yeah, and I'll take it out,
a lot of deers and cows.
Right, you got to pay attention. We're not there yet. Speaking of hot topics, a lot of discussion around concussion protocols in sports.
Yep.
I think this is one of the coolest technologies I've seen in a while. Inexpensive consumer electronics that can be used to diagnose not only concussions, but fatigue and other issues. We're going to take a look at SyncThink's iSync technology that can help doctors diagnose head injuries. And you're going to do it.
I'm going to do it. We're going to see how fatigued I am. Yep.
Okay. We have a baseline. On the baseline, she was completely normal.
Yes.
But I'm no doctor, so I can't diagnose.
We
right?
have gone live since then, so who knows?
Who could be going on anything with me right now? I did it too. They said my eyes. I love this. He said, well, I'm afraid your eyes are occluded. I said, what? He said, you got droopy eyelids, dude. We got to use Florence. She's younger. I do have droopy eyes. Look at that. Those are droopy. You can hardly see my eyes. They're droopy. Anyway, we'll let Florence do this because apparently I tried this, but it did.
Oh, boy. Ugh. Oh, boy.
Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. It was yesterday. I was at the gym and I ran into my old loan officer, okay? Good friend Dave. And I reminded him, and because I talk about it in the ad all the time, how when Lisa and I bought our house in 2013, we went to the bank, the old, you know, the one with a yeah, and we applied for the loan, and this is so old fashioned. You get all dressed up, say, please, can I have some money? Mm-hmm. They give you an application, then you have to go to the attic, and you have to get all your pay stubs and your bank statements. But the thing is, it was a nightmare. It took literally more than a month. I think it took 2 months to get this home loan. They kept coming back and saying, give us more, give us more. And I kind of ribbed Dave and I said, remember that? He said, remember that? I never worked with that bank again. That was the last loan I ever did with those guys. And I said, well, what do you think of Quicken Loans? He says, love them. Quicken Loans from Rocket Mortgage. He said, these guys are smart. They're savvy. Number one in customer approval since 2010. So I should have known better in 2013. 8 years in a row for mortgage origination. Number one in their hearts since 2014 for mortgage servicing. And they've created something that geeks love. It's called Rocket Mortgage, and it's an entirely online mortgage approval process. And not doesn't take months like our loan did. Doesn't take weeks. Doesn't take days. It takes around 10 minutes to get home loan approval. You go to, in fact, you could do it right now. Go to Quicken Loans website. It's rocketmortgage.com/NSS. rocketmortgage.com/NSS. You answer a few simple questions. You choose the term, the rate, the down payment. They get all the information from financial institutions with your permission. They crunch the numbers, and based on income, assets, and credit, they'll offer you the home loans for which you qualify. And then, boom, you're approved. All of that so fast you could do it. You could be at an open house. It's that simple. I want you to go right now and get it started. Go to rocketmortgage.com/NSS. You can get it started. You don't have to go through the whole process, but you'll be ready the next time you go to an open. You ever do that? You go to an open house? You rent probably, right?
No, I own.
You bought. So do you remember when you first saw that place? And you go, I should get this, right?
Yes.
And then you don't want to have to go, now I got to go to the bank and stuff. By then, somebody's going to buy it.
Yep.
Get pre-approved. Do it right now. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. It's a huge head start. And it's the easiest, best thing in the world. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. By the way, Rocket Mortgage has great refi rates, too. Now's the time to lock in that low rate. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. And we thank them so much for their support of the new screensavers. All right, you ready to get tested?
Yeah, let's do this.
Okay.
All right.
Should I hit her in the head before we go? Just to see? No, let's not do that. No concussions here. So far, no one has ever has received a concussion on this show.
That's great.
I'm happy to say. Joining us now, Laura, I'm going to say your name now, Yeezys.
Correct.
Did I say that right?
Uh-huh.
Laura is the CEO of a company called iSync, which is really interesting. Laura, welcome to the screensaver.
Thank you.
Laura's been around, by the way. We were just talking. You were a CEO at Yahoo Mail in the early days. You were at Netscape's browser division, AOL.
That's
right. A lot
right.
of startups. But you said you wanted to get into a medical startup this time around.
Yeah, I saw the two worlds, the medical world and the technology world, converging. I grew up in a medical family, and I saw a huge opportunity where we could use software scale and have a big impact on people's health.
So your colleague is here. What, introduce him so we know.
This is Dan Beeler, CTO. He helped develop the product.
Oh, you helped do this. Okay. This is what's really cool is it is basically consumer grade. This is a Gear VR.
Yeah.
Samsung Gear VR, and a standard Android phone. But you've done some modifications to it.
Yeah. So what you can see here is we have an infrared camera. We send these goggles to Germany. They install high-grade infrared camera. And then you can also see there's lights installed around the lenses.
Okay.
So the cameras are, of course, picking up on those lights as you look at the information.
So what? So we're going to put this on Florence?
Yes.
Okay. What is Florence going to see? What's going to happen?
So what's going to happen is first the test will calibrate, making sure that we get a good read on her eyes.
That's when I failed.
And
my eyes
then she will follow a dot in a circle.
Okay. I heard it beep. Okay.
Yeah.
So, by the way, you could still do it with me, even with my occluded eyes, but it just takes a little more time and a little more adjustment, and I have to stare at it. So, Florence is young and beautiful, and we're going to let her do it instead of the old, ugly old man. Don't break it, Laura.
Okay, I'll try
now,
not
to. Now, who's using this? You said Pac-12 is using it now in their sports?
Right, the Pac-12, Georgia Tech, Iowa, Texas.
Massachusetts General Hospital?
Golden State Warriors.
The Warriors. Now, and you said the Warriors do more than just concussion protocol.
Right. So they're using the technology, of course, if they suspect a concussion. But, you know, there's a big recognition that fatigue plays a big role in performance in sports. In fact, they're changing the NBA schedule next year because of that. And so they test the athletes on a regular basis to make sure that they're
optimize
ready to
performance.
Exactly.
Yeah. So normally what would happen is there. Oh, look, that's Florence's eyes.
Oh, you can see my eyes.
Oh,
yes.
That's great. You see, you're not occluded at all.
Yes. And so you see those little white dots? That shows us that we're getting an excellent reading of her eyes. And we'll actually be able to see her take the test. So right now, as the dot is jumping around, it's calibrating her. So she needs to follow the dot. And shortly, it will go in a circle. And what's special about a circle is we all know what circles look like, right? It's a predictable pattern. And it being
that's
able
important.
To... Exactly. So we're measuring her eyes following the light going in a circle. In the goggles, it's actually a little bit smoother. And any deviations from following the circle is picked up by the camera.
And so this is interesting because if you're an athlete, especially if you're, let's say, an NFL football player, where you're really strongly incented to get back in the game.
Right.
The concussion protocols as they stand now, they can game them.
So this is the big challenge with most of the tests for concussion is that they're very subjective. So that requires the player to report how they feel.
Right.
You know, in terms of a doctor following you, we've all seen people like
do
this test, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually not so easy to follow where people are looking.
Right.
The cognitive tests can be easily gamed. People will fake their baseline so that they're not found to be concussed. So
we've
all
heard
of this.
And of course, it's very dangerous to continue to play after you've had a concussion. You can really have serious consequences.
So what we can see on the tablet, if we want to switch to that, is on the left, we see actually an image of what she was looking at, of the movement of her eye. Yeah. And you can see that it's going in a circle properly. And then on the right, it's clustered fairly close, so there was very little deviation. And so green shows that we had a good quality test.
A 1.02.
Great. And typically anything below 2 is normal. So, you know, this is an excellent...
Congratulations, Florence. You can go back in the game.
So what's interesting is in concussion, we tend to see like a whisker pattern that the eyes jump ahead. Mm-hmm. So instead of following the dot correctly, you're jumping ahead and then having to correct. And that's because the brain is actually disinhibited, which happens in concussion. And if you've ever known someone to have a concussion, oftentimes they're disinhibited in terms of their personality. Yeah. So it's consistent. Now, in fatigue, we see a different result. So the eye, instead of jumping ahead, tends to, like, wobble off the light. It's tired, right?
Was it hard work?
Yeah.
You have to kind of pay attention.
I really was paying attention. Yeah.
So if you're tired,
I tuned you guys out for a second. To kind of
you wouldn't be the first.
So we can pick that up, and actually we can find other brain health issues, and we're doing further research on that. Right now, we've been focusing on selling to the elite sports teams and clinics, but what we're excited about is in the future as VR and AR technology becomes more widely available, our tests can run potentially on those platforms because they're starting to include eye trackers. And then this is something that could be widely deployed recreationally.
How interesting.
So
do you imagine, like, with AR glasses that they could give you, just like an Apple Watch gives me feedback about, you know, what's going on, that you
could
get that kind of...
what I'm hoping, and I think this is reasonable to expect, is, you know, this year we see, you know, the big budget college sports and pro teams using it. Maybe the next year the price will be where, you know, high school teams will have it. And then shortly thereafter, we can all have them at home.
Wow.
Right? You know, you could imagine, you know, your kid says, "Mom, I want the keys to the car." And, you know, we say, well, let's test you. Let's see if you can eye track.
Could it be done passively so that you don't have to go through a test that's tracking all the time, or you would have to do a test?
You would need to do a test. Okay. But as you pointed out early, you can't game it. The test result is the test result.
I like that, yeah.
A couple
you
of other...
You still need a doctor, though, to judge it. It's not something that can be done automatically.
Right. So you get a reading, you get a number, you get a pattern, and this, just like an EKG or a glucose number, that goes to the doctor.
Right.
Right. If you use a home blood pressure cuff, that you don't diagnose right. yourself with hypertension. You take your series of numbers and you give them to the doctor.
But importantly, yeah. the FDA has approved this.
It's approved it as essentially an assessment of eye tracking.
As a diagnostic, yeah.
For eye tracking.
That's really cool.
Another yeah. couple of things that are cool is that you can see recovery. So, you know, you can see, let's say, an injury state, and then you can see the player getting better.
Right.
You know, and also, you know, you talked about coaches wanting the players to go back in. But what we know is that after concussion, people don't play very well. And it makes sense. If you can't follow a dot in a circle, how are you going to catch a ball?
Right.
So I think it has more credibility, and we therefore get more buy-in by the coaches.
It's interesting that the Warriors use it because they're very high-tech. They're owned by entrepreneurs, and it makes sense that they would be adopting
they're
the latest.
They're totally early adopters, and we love working with them.
Yeah, I bet you do. Yeah, what fun. I think if you're a coach at a big school with some budget, it's not cheap, I'm sure.
Right now, the goggles are relatively expensive, yeah. and we charge for the support and analytical service. But as I said, we see this becoming more mainstream over time.
Nice. Is there a website people should
Yes, www.syncthink.com.
Syncthink.com. Wow, isn't that interesting? Really cool. Laura, very nice to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me on.
Laura Eces, the CEO of SyncThink.com, and we're glad to know Florence is going to be okay.
Me too.
Good job.
Me too. Thank you.
We're going to take the Amazon Fire TV cube for a spin in a bit, but first here's Megan Maroney continuing her digital cleanse series on adjusting your online privacy settings in a post-GDPR.
Last summer, I started the TWiT digital cleanse, and since that time, the general data privacy regulations have forced companies to update their privacy policies. Yes, it was very annoying to get all those privacy update emails, but the upside is that now we have the power to adjust some of our privacy settings so that we can still use these services without giving away all of our information. Today, I'll show you three ways to change the default privacy settings on popular sites and services to help you protect yourself. Number one, Twitter. To control how Twitter collects and shares your data, go to twitter.com/settings/personalization, where you'll see that everything is turned on by default, of course. Don't care to see personalized ads? Uncheck that. Don't want Twitter to show you content based on where you go on the rest of the web? Uncheck that. Read the settings carefully and decide what information is worth sharing to improve your experience on Twitter. Or just disable everything. Note that not sharing this information on Twitter might mean you'll see less relevant content, but since Twitter still shows me ads directed at dudes, I'm not sure they're doing a very good job anyway. Or maybe they're doing a great job and I truly do tweet like a dude. Who knows? Number two, Google. To see your settings and change them, go to myaccount.google.com. To review the information that Google collects and claims to use to make the service work better for you, click Manage Your Google Activity under Personal Info and Privacy. Click Go to Activity Controls and browse through your selections. Like Twitter, these info collecting tools are all turned on by default. At the very least, you might want to manage activity under Location History so Google doesn't track you wherever you go. Note that if traffic predictions and travel recommendations based on the places you've visited with your devices are really important to you, turning this off could make them less accurate. Number three, Apple. Now, I love Apple more than most, but even I have some issues with the way they track us for their benefit. To find out the information they use for ad tracking, go to Settings, Privacy, Advertising, then tap View ad information. Although your personal data is not provided to third parties, Apple gives you a random identifier that serves ads and includes you in what it calls segments. Here I can see that advertisers targeting me include NBC. Apple also uses my devices, connectivity, mobile carrier, time zone, and location if the location-based Apple ad system service is turned on. If you'd like to limit ad tracking, tap the slider under All Advertisers. And that is it. If you have privacy tips for me, I want to hear them. Email me at megan@twit.tv. I host iOS Today every Tuesday with Leo, and I host Tech News Weekly every Thursday with Jason Howard.
Thank you, Megan. Florence, how do you, you're a cable cutter, aren't you? Network.
Oh, yeah, long time ago.
You watch everything, as they say, over the top, over the internet.
Well, I watch it on YouTube TV now, so I guess how much of a cord cutter does that make me?
You know, I love YouTube TV. I was watching the World Cup during work.
Yep.
Oh, I shouldn't tell the boss that.
You can listen to it. It's fine. It's fine.
I was doing the radio show and watching the Germany game.
Goal.
Yeah, goal. I almost did that. Goal. But that's a great start because it gives you a lot of channels, including locals. Do you have a set-top box, like a Roku or an Apple TV?
I used to have a Roku, but it's a dust collector now because I'm a Chromecast user.
You like Chromecast?
I've got Chromecast in every TV and monitor in my house.
Any thinking at all about Amazon's Fire TV? Have you ever thought about that?
My father is actually an Amazon guy.
Yeah.
He really fell into that ecosystem, and he likes it, but now he's really bummed about the lack of YouTube. So that kind of lost their...
And maybe they'll get it eventually, get it back. And I wish YouTube TV were on it, because for me, that would be enough to put it over the top.
Because
then it would be everything. This is the newest Amazon Fire TV device. They call it the Cube. I wonder why. It is $119, so it is the most expensive Fire TV available. You can get those Fire Sticks for $50, $40 bucks. But the idea of this is it has Amazon's Echo built into it. So it's a voice control for your TV. This Cube actually hides infrared transmitters, so it will actually turn your TV on, your AV receiver. If you have stuff in a case, you know, as many people do, it has an IR blaster attachment that you can attach to it. It uses Wi-Fi, but it also comes with an adapter, a little dongle that you can do Ethernet on it, and it comes with the same remote that all the other Fire TVs come with. But you won't be using the remote that much, because built into this Cube, there's an Amazon Echo. There's a little speaker. It fires down, and you can see it's sitting on little feet so that the sound can come out. Is there a hair on that? What is that? That's one thing, by the way. This was completely wrapped in plastic. You know how they do everything now? It's wrapped in plastic. That's because this is a fingerprint and apparently a gray hair magnet. I don't know where that came from. And a dust magnet. And that is one thing. You're going to definitely want to polish this every few days. I don't know if it's necessary functionality, just for good looks. Inside, it's got the standard array mics, you know, the far-field microphones. There's eight of them in there. They're beam-forming to pick up your voice. There's also a near-field mic on the remote, so if you're sitting on the couch and it can't hear you very well. They say place it a little way from speakers. If the speakers are loud, it'll be harder to talk to it. Inside, a 1.5 gigahertz quad-core ARM processor, 2 gigs of RAM. This thing is fairly hefty. 16 gigs of storage is kind of like an Android device.
Yep, a little Android TV box.
I think Fire TV and Fire in general is a kind of a hacked version of Android, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Hacked is probably not the right word. Modified. Forked. Let's see, what else? HDMI 2.0a up to... This is what I liked. It supports 4K TVs, 60 frames a second. Mm-hmm. It does support HDR, HDR10 only. Dolby Atmos, if your receiver supports that, and 7.1 sound. So you connect via an HDMI cable. We've got it connected into our TV via the HDMI cable right now. And now I can turn on the TV by saying, Echo, turn on TV. It recognized my device, but you should look on the website to make sure it's compatible with your TV. I have an LG OLED. It works with that. Your receiver, if you use one, I have a Denon receiver. It recognized it and immediately worked. So that was kind of nice. You have to go through a little setup process to make sure. It even controls some cable boxes, but it's limited. DirecTV's, U-verse, Dish, Comcast, Spectrum, Verizon, Cox, and Frontier. It does not support my TiVo, so I wasn't able to use it that way. However, it's a really nice thing to be able to walk into the room, say, for instance, Echo, watch Westworld. It has, because it's Fire TV, it has apps for Netflix. In this case, it's using HBO Go. Now, notice, here's one catch. It has two Westworlds. It has the movie, but it also has the HBO TV show. So now I have to say, Echo, play number one, so that it will play the proper one of the two. But it does do that, and it's kind of cool to be able to... Oh, now watch. Here's another problem. It didn't remember where I was. And I don't know. Let's try it. Echo, play season 2, episode 9.
Here's what I found.
Yeah, see, this is the problem. I could say Echo, play at this point. But in some cases, and unfortunately far too many cases, you're going to end up picking up the remote and navigating through the Fire TV to get to the proper series and all of that stuff. It will do music as well. Echo, stop. Echo, listen to The Grateful Dead.
Here's a playlist you might like. 50 Great Beatles songs from Amazon Music.
That's close. The Grateful Beatles.
Same era.
It's very much, if you've ever used an Echo Show, which is their screen-based device, it's very much like the Echo Show. So you're going to have lyrics, if it ever plays. You're going to have lyrics. I don't know what's going on. It's not playing music. When it does, there we go. So you're going to see lyrics come across. You see this. I kind of like this. It uses your big screen TV as an enunciator.
Party visual. It's party, a good party visual.
And if you have a nice stereo system hooked up, you're going to have good sound. You can read audible books this way. Echo, what's the weather like in London?
Right now in London, United Kingdom, it's 67 degrees Fahrenheit with hazy skies.
Wow.
Tonight's forecast has cloudy skies moving in and out with a low of 53 degrees.
Shoot me? Really? That's what that's a thing? Echo, stop. Echo, what's the weather here?
In London, United Kingdom, it's 67 degrees Fahrenheit with hazy skies. You can look for cloudy skies moving in and out with a low of 53 degrees.
I do like it that it puts the display up there.
Yeah, that's nice.
That's kind of cool. If you have right now an Echo Show, you'll know a lot of the functionality that's available here. For instance, if you have a video doorbell or cameras around the house, Nest, Ring, and other companies allow you to see the video. So I could say, if I don't have a doorbell here, but I could say, Echo, show me my Ring doorbell, and I can see who's at the front door. That's kind of neat. You can control volume. You can say, Echo, turn the volume up, turn the volume down. You can say, if it works with your cable box, tune to a channel. You could say, for instance, Echo, watch ESPN if you wanted to watch the World Cup. So there's some things you can't do, but Amazon says they're coming. For instance, you can't do any of the drop-in or voice dialing features.
Which is a big part of the...
But it makes sense because you don't have a camera either. So drop-in might be a little less than useful. But they say they're going to add that or some form of capability. It doesn't do multi-room music either. Again, Amazon says that's coming. Echo, go home. It seems a little slow to respond, and this is something Amazon said they're going to speed up. I noticed it is a little bit slow in response, but they say a firmware update will fix this. Netflix does work now. It didn't work originally. You'll have to install the apps just as you would on a Fire TV so that it can do all the things you want to do. I am able to watch, as you can see, NBC, Netflix, Amazon Prime, HBO Go, Showtime, and as you might expect, there's kind of a... A lot of Amazon pitching its own content up there. That's really what this device is all about. I have to say, if you're going to get a Fire TV and you don't mind spending more, because it's $120, it's nice to have the voice control. My favorite thing is to, as I'm leaving the room, say, Echo, turn off TV. And it'll turn off the TV. It'll turn off the receiver. It'll turn off the satellite box, whatever it is that you've got hooked up to it. That's kind of cool, right? You can pause video. Voice control is, to me, great, but you've already seen, as I've done this demo, some of it isn't perfect.
Nope.
There's a little bit, sometimes, of extra talking involved.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not unusual for it to misunderstand. If you've got an Echo, you know this, and do the wrong thing.
One of the reasons I don't have an Echo is because I enjoy the conversational nature of the Google Assistant.
It's maybe a little bit smarter. Yeah. On the other hand, we were playing earlier the Westworld game, the maze game, and we were able to play it. So it's, you know, it can do most of the things an Echo will do. And it put a nice little display up on the screen. It wasn't interactive, but it kind of showed you what you were doing, which is kind of cool.
I believe Alexa has over 33,000 skills.
Yeah.
So
I think it's even more now.
That's thousands and thousands more than Google or Apple.
Google's catching up, though. Apple
still
will never
catch up. In the thousands, low thousands.
Right. As you mentioned, and I think this is a big gap, there's no YouTube app, there's no YouTube TV app.
But
boy, I,
competition.
I think part of it is Amazon doesn't like Google and Google doesn't like Amazon.
Well, no, they're a direct competition now. Got to steal those people away from one another. And
if you already have a Roku box or an Apple TV box, this won't talk to those. So it isn't a remote control for them. If you want that, you might want a Harmony Hub or something like that that does let you use Amazon's Echo to control the hub, which then can control all those other devices. And frankly, this is designed to replace an Apple TV or Roku. It's just it doesn't have all of the channels that those guys do. They say, oh, no problem. You can use the Silk browser built in to watch YouTube.
Yes.
That's not really a desirable choice, I don't think. So that's it, $119. If you want voice control of your TV, it's a pretty interesting and cool way to do it. It does work as well as an Echo works, which means that sometimes you have to ask twice for things you want. But I, you know what? I'm going to probably keep this in my cabinet. It's kind of nice to have.
Give it a spin.
Makes it easy. And there are times when you just want to sit down and say, you know, Echo, watch Game of Thrones, and Game of Thrones will start playing. That's pretty cool. Let's try it. Echo, watch Game of Thrones.
I can play that on Prime Video or find it on Fire TV. Which would you like?
Fire TV.
So here's Game of Thrones.
So that was cool that it knew that it was available for rent on Amazon Prime. Or I could watch it because I already have HBO Go installed. I could watch it on the Fire TV.
And it gave you the options audibly.
Yeah. That's cool. I think it's a good product. I like it. But you'll understand the limitations. I think that may affect you. There you go. That's Amazon's Fire Cube, $120, adding voice control to your home theater. Now it's time for a call for help.
A member of the King's Guild.
Oh, now Game of Thrones is playing.
So I wasn't humiliated enough already.
It's coming back next year, everyone.
Yeah,
You're going to have to wait.
Winter is not here yet. It's
in
summer
honor
is
of
coming.
Jon Snow's wedding.
On the line, Jim. Did you see that?
Yes, I did.
Jon Snow married Ygritte, the woman who shot him in the heart with an arrow.
She took his heart.
But it was the Kit Harington. It was the actor marrying the actress. Right. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Hello, Leo. Hello, Florence. Good to see you both.
Everybody in Game of Thrones was there except Hodor. He didn't come.
Really?
Yeah.
You think he would DJ at least. He's a DJ in
real life. He's a DJ, yeah. Jim, what can we do for you today?
We have Philips Hue lights in the house, and we have scenes set up for various things. My wife works at home, so she has morning work that's bright and blue and afternoon work where it shifts to a yellow light.
Oh,
we also have some cozy leg heaters that go under desks, and they plug into the wall, and I'd like to be able to control those as well because they're pretty easy to forget you've left on, and you come back a couple days later and realize the room's nice and warm. I've looked at various plugs like the iHome Wi-Fi and Eve Energy. I just don't know which ones will fit with the Hue. I know there are a couple of different types of Zigbee out there, flavors. So I'd like to know what will fit in that system. I don't really want to put up another hub and a whole other system and have to worry about the security with that and everything else.
Well, you're in luck because I don't know anything about this. But Florence Ion is here.
Yes, based on all of my own little tinkering that I've done at home, I also have Philips Hue lights, and I don't like to deal with extra hubs. So what I did is I bought a couple of TP-Link outlets. You can buy them with energy monitoring. Heaters, I kind of looked at the one that you have. I believe that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the output is around 1,500 volts, so you want to get
watts. Yeah.
Thank you.
They tend to draw a lot of power.
Right? Yeah, but these smart outlets, some of them can handle up to 1,800 watts. So this one from TP-Link, these are the ones that I use in my house. We've used them for our Christmas lights. You can use them for like air conditioning units. They're great. They're kind of big and chunky, but they're very cost effective, which
is why I like them. You can control when it turns the heater on and off by controlling this power outlet.
Yes.
That's cool. And I like the energy monitoring.
Yes.
That's interesting. What, is that an app that you would see? Or?
So TP-Link uses the Casa app with a K. It is all Wi-Fi based, so you don't have to worry about using a hub. But if you want something maybe a little more premium, Belkin Wemo is also a great ecosystem of connected devices to look into.
But that needs a Wemo hub, doesn't it?
I don't think it does.
Oh, it doesn't.
I believe it's just through Wi-Fi.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
That's good. All right. Yeah, because you already have the hub for the Philips light.
Right.
We already have the hub, and then we have a bunch of, like I said, scenes set up to control different things, like leaving the house. And it'll say, okay, I'll turn off this stuff you don't want.
Can you use the Casa app to do that, to set up a scene or a routine?
You're going to have to use IFTTT. So if you're comfortable with that. If this, then that. It's Casa's got a channel on there. Belkin's got a channel on there. SmartThings also, but again, SmartThings requires a hub, so don't even bother with SmartThings. And unfortunately, the Philips Hue hub is proprietary, so you can only use it with your bulbs, which is a bummer.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to the new release of Siri when it will do whatever they call it,
HomeKit.
HomeKit. Well, I have HomeKit, but the next version of Siri will do the collection of actions. I don't know what they call it. Yes. Like automated built-in.
Siri Suggestions, which is based on stuff that it notices you doing, and it could say, well, you always get a mojito at this hour, so should you get one today? And then there's a Siri Automation. It's the workflow stuff that Apple bought. And that will give you if-this-then-that-like capabilities with everything that HomeKit works with. HomeKit does work with the Hues, right?
Yes, it does.
I think the TP-Linker HomeKit enabled.
They do work with the Belkins, I know very well.
The Wemo, they do.
They work with Netgears, you know, all sorts of...
We're so close, but we're not quite there yet. And this has been going on. Jim, I know you've been doing this for a long time. This has kind of been the Achilles heel of home automation is that nothing talks to anything else. There's competing proprietary protocols like Z-Wave and Zigbee. Mm-hmm. SmartThings was designed to kind of bridge that gap, but then you know that doesn't work with the Philips. It's such a frustration. You know, you really have.
And
to,
if in the Zigbee, there's like two different flavors of Zigbee or something. Right. It's like, oh come on, can't you guys even get one standard? But that's the joy of standards, right? There's so many of them.
An unlimited number.
Yep.
Anyway, those TP, I hear good things about both the Wemo and the TP Link.
Yep, and I've used both, so.
Great.
They're kind of a recommendation for me and what I've used.
I think you have an assignment for a know-how episode.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's definitely in the works.
I don't think you can get this transmitter to work on 1800 watts, though. I think you're going to need a little bit.
No, that's a little hardcore for me.
Hey, Jim.
Great. This sounds great. Thanks, Florence. Thanks, Leah.
Have fun, Jim. Most of all, have fun.
Take care.
Take care.
I think we have to rename you Florence IoT instead of ION.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about... Leo, I didn't even think about
that.
I didn't even think about marketing my own name in that way. Shame on me.
Oh, that Flyot. It doesn't...
It's better than Flyon, because it sounds like I got a fly flying on me.
Flyon sounds like an inert gas. Not good either, by the way. Ian Thompson, what does Flyot sound like, though? That doesn't sound much better.
I can market it somehow. I'll figure it out.
IoT. There's something there. There's something there. We'll work on it. Next week, Ian Thompson will be our co-host. If you have a tech question for me or Ian, IOT, here's how you ask.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
Hey, I forgot to thank Mike, who did our show open, Michael Kidd. I would tell you where he's from, but he's from a place unknown. He lives in an RV and has been for 10 years. And you might say, well, gosh, how do you survive in an RV? He used to work in a fast attack nuclear sub running the reactor, so he's used to kind of tight quarters.
Yeah.
I bet you the RV feels like spacious compared to a sub, right?
Actually, it's only about a third the size.
Yeah, but there's only you in there instead of 200 guys, okay?
And I can go outside without a scuba mask.
Yes, which is nice. Yeah. You didn't leave the sub in a scuba suit, did you?
No. That was somebody else.
Yeah.
It's like going into space.
That would be really interesting, wouldn't it, to run a nuclear reactor on a fast attack sub? That'd be very interesting.
Yeah, I would feel claustrophobic, actually. Just thinking about it.
No claustrophobia?
A little anxiety.
No. You know what I think about, and maybe this is, color me crazy. I think about how bad it would smell with 200 guys.
Oh, just think about an airplane after 4 hours, right?
Yeah.
We have air scrubbers.
Oh, okay,
air scrubbers.
Good.
Airplanes should get that.
Okay. Coming up, our mailbag. Anyway, nice job, Michael. Thank you. He's got a great voice.
Great voice.
Coming up, our mailbag. But right now, we're going to get a review of, I like it, you don't, the new Google Podcast app on Android from Jason Howard. I'm all about Android.
Back in 2005, Apple began to support podcasts by including them in iTunes, and that meant iPod users had direct access to all that free content. Apple then made it relatively easy for new iPhone users to find, subscribe, and enjoy podcasts on their smartphones. Google, on the other hand, has had a rough go at podcast support on Android. In 2009, you may remember they released Google Listen. It was a product out of its Google Labs experimental division that was later opened up for a wide release to the growing Android user base. The app was a search engine and subscription manager for podcasts, but it was poorly designed. Almost exactly 3 years later, Google shuttered Listen, since the Play Store was filled with plenty of third-party podcast aggregators. And funny side note, anyone managing playlists inside Listen when it was shuttered, they were consoled with the fact that those playlists would move over to Google Reader. So, you know, totally safe. Anyways, third-party developers seized on the opportunity presented here. Pocket Cast, Beyond Pod, Podcast Addict, and many more options have kept users very happy. Google tried again by adding podcast support into their Google Play Music app, but even that's going away sometime soon because, as you already know, YouTube Music becomes Google's next big music service. Are we confused yet? Now Google is testing the old adage, third time's a charm, by releasing Google Podcasts earlier this week. Let's take a look at Google's latest effort to finally nail this 13-year fad. The Google Podcasts app isn't really an app in the traditional sense. It's more of a shortcut that launches the podcast functionality that is already on your device. It's actually hidden inside the Google Search app if you are up to date. But you wouldn't know it once you launch it. Things look pretty similar in design to Google's modern assistant stylings. A whole lot of white space with pockets of actionable information. Okay. Up top is a gallery of thumbnails for the podcasts that I have subscribed to within the app. I can tap on any one of those. It's going to take me through to the list of episodes for that particular podcast. I did notice that in some cases, episodes from different shows within a network all appeared in the same single list. Now, this isn't the case with Twitch shows, but Bigger Pockets, for example, has three different shows that they produce every week on their network, and they all ended up in a single episode list here, even though I only intended to subscribe to the main podcast. That is a little odd, and I don't know who's to blame for it, but hidden in the overflow menu here is actually a neat option to send this podcast to my home screen. And that creates a shortcut, which is a nice little extra. I can just tap it on the home screen and launch right into the podcast. Now, all of these episodes can be streamed by tapping play next to the episode on the list, or I can tap into the episode information and then choose to download it for later listening. While it's playing, I have access to the standard controls, complete with 30-second skip forward and 10-second skip backward buttons. There's also a playback speed option that personally I enjoy setting at 1.2 times the speed. Back on the main screen is a For You section, and this is where you find a list of new episodes from those subscribed podcasts, along with any downloads that you happen to store on your phone. And there's also an In Progress tab, which is really nice. This tracks where I am in my many episodes, and this tracking actually follows through Assistant, which means I can pause this podcast on my phone and then ask my Google Home to play that podcast, and it's going to pick up where I left off on my other device. Very nice. And this is a cool thing for creators. You can actually embed a donate button into the podcast show page to make a little extra money off of your show. Now, down below, you're also going to find all sorts of sections pulled from the many signals that you've given Google as to the many podcast interests you might have. Basically, a number of topical carousels to browse for new shows to listen to. And really, at this early stage, that's about it. Pretty bare bones. Though there is one final point, and perhaps this is the biggest promise of Google Podcasts. Up top is that ever familiar search button, which you will use to search for your favorite podcast by name. But this really ties into why this app is built into the Google Search app on the phone to begin with. Google plans to add new features in the coming months that will further integrate its AI smarts and search capabilities into podcast content. This is super exciting. It's going to include things like auto-generated closed captioning of podcasts, on-the-fly translation so you can understand podcasts that were recorded in other languages, and search capabilities that reach into the podcast content. Meaning you could do a Google search for, I don't know, two-factor authentication with Google Voice and magically be pointed to that time on This Week in Google when I locked myself out of my Google account in the middle of the show. The possibilities are pretty cool, if you ask me. Overall, Google Podcasts is a good starting point, maybe a little bland and feature-less, but it's what it promises to deliver in the near future that has me intrigued. I'm Jason Howell, and you can catch me on All About Android, Tech News Weekly, and pretty much everywhere else on the Twit Network.
Thank you, Jason. What did he call it? Feature light?
Feature less.
Less. Here's one thing it doesn't do. You don't like
it. It doesn't work on Android Auto.
So you
thus
have,
far, I mean, yeah. I've checked
so,
it.
So, but there are podcast apps that do?
Pocket Casts works.
Does it show up on the screen?
It does. Has
really?
A little, has a little interface and a little overflow
See,
menu.
That's nice.
Stitcher Podcast also works with Android Auto.
So I imagine Google has plans.
I'm sure very soon. But then, you know, I just when you're used to something already.
My favorite thing is that home screen thing, because I love taking the podcasts I listen to all the time and just having a button there. It'd be really cool if it could do that on Android Auto, because then you'd have a button for the shows you wanted to listen to, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, we'll watch with interest. You know what they call people who listen, like Jason, to podcasts at faster than the normal speed?
Hmm.
Podfasters.
Oh.
Let's get the mailbag in here. I didn't make that
up.
It's true. Look at that. It rolls all on its own. It's under its own speed and motivation. Florence, pick an email and an email.
I'm
going
to pick this behind one. Oh, all right.
Oh, I got number one.
Oh.
Leo
oh,
and Flo. That's a nice feel to it. Leo and Flo.
Both three-letter names.
Liot and Iot. I need a new cellular phone. I need a new one. My question is, in the past, you mentioned the Motorola phones had the purest of Android operating systems. Which models would you suggest now for purity?
I would still suggest Motorola. They just released the G6.
Yeah.
$250 phone. Lowish, mid-range-ish specs.
Yeah.
But, you know, they...
Price is right.
The price is right. They typically offer a very nice version of Android that's not super bloated.
They're still pretty simple. Yeah, they have a few extra Moto features.
Yep,
which are good.
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah.
The Moto X4 is another great choice. That one is just on Project Fi. That's an Android One phone. So if you want, like, Android...
Is Android One pure Android?
It's a version of Android.
It's a lightweight version.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a lightweight version of Android. That one's good. And also another one, depending on how much money you want to spend, OnePlus. The OnePlus 6 is phenomenal. Interface is pretty close to regular Android. Updates might not be as frequent, but they're already in the the P beta, the Android P beta. They've got it.
Yeah, and Motorola can go P, right?
Yep,
I like it that Google offered the public beta on more than just Pixel phones. And, of course, you didn't mention, but Google's own phone is the purest of pure Android.
Yes, the Pixel. Yes, of course, the Pixel.
Yeah. But it's expensive.
It is. That's kind of the reason I don't immediately suggest it.
What do you carry?
I'm still carrying the Pixel 2.
Yeah, me too. I like the Pixel 2. I have the XL, but I really like the Pixel 2. I just got, because I was very interested, and I know Miriam reviewed it on All About Android, the Huawei P20.
Yeah, that's a beautiful phone.
Beautiful, but I was interested in the camera. It's got a 20 megapixel and a 12 megapixel dual lenses. It has all this interesting stuff going on. But, you know,
the interface.
Well, eMUI is not great, but you know what I... It's interesting because this is a Chinese phone. In fact, you have to buy it from a Chinese company. It's not sold in the United States.
Or AliExpress,
Yeah. And I got it shipped from China. And immediately, the first thing you do when you turn it on, it says, oh, you know, this is even before we get to the Android sign-up stuff. For weather forecasts, we need some permissions. Is it okay? Well, location, yeah. If we also know your IMEI number and your MAC address... For weather? Really? And it goes on.
Down to the location, just exactly where you're standing, Leo.
Huawei is asking for a direct identifier for you, for your phone, and they're asking to keep it. And it goes on throughout the phone. There's lots of places where Huawei says, and now we'd like to know your motion tracking and your GPS coordinates and on and on and on and on. And I really, what it underscored for me, even though we knock Google for, you know, not respecting privacy, how much more the phones we get in the United States, and particularly from Google, respect your privacy than this phone from China, where they make no effort to hide the fact that they're basically collecting everything there is about you and attaching it to your IMEI number, which is unique to you, right?
Yep.
So I'm going to use it. I think it's an interesting phone. I don't really care if people in China track me. But boy, it really does argue for getting a Google phone that's going to be pure.
Yeah.
Even the Motorola phones are made in China by Lenovo, mm-hmm. which is a Chinese company. The Google phone, you know, it's made by Huawei, I think. But Google's very careful about keeping the stuff, the bad
yeah.
stuff off.
Yeah, the Pixels currently, the Pixel 2 XL is made by LG, and the Pixel 2 is made by HTC.
Oh, okay, so neither one's scenes. Huawei, and HTC yeah. is a Taiwanese company, yeah. so yeah. Okay.
Well, HTC is a Google company now.
But yeah, the engineers are.
yeah.
It's kind of confusing.
Yeah.
And LG, of course, South Korean.
Yep.
What is your question saying?
What is my question? This is email number two.
Yeah.
So, hello. I'm looking for a home camera system that is reliable and won't break the bank. There are so many systems that I have little idea what to choose. Can you give me some assistance? Thanks for your time, Jay.
Well, how about $30?
This.
And no monthly subscription.
$30.
And see
right
how it's
here.
Looking around?
Yeah, it's been doing all show.
It has. This is the Wyze, W-Y-Z-E.
Zed.
I say Zed because...
Yes, that's Z for those of you Americans.
Yeah, every other country calls it a Zed. it's called the Wyze Cam Pan.
Mm-hmm. It pans.
They have an even cheaper one for $20. It doesn't pan, but I like the pan because here's what it does. And you don't have to turn this on, but I've turned it on now. It has a patrol route. So it goes, and you can set this up to look. It's actually looking around. And if it sees motion, it notifies you. $30 is very affordable.
Yep.
It's a good HD camera. It's got night vision. It's got a Wyze app that I think is quite good. It's a pan tilt zoom. So if you can get the notifications, but if you say, well, I'd like to see what's going on in that corner, you can literally, with your finger or with the controls, aim the camera, which is pretty amazing. The other thing I love is there's no subscription fee. You know, Google charges a lot for the Nest subscription
fee.
Nest
charges minimum of $100 a year. That's
yeah.
for one camera.
This records,
for 10 days.
Sends you notifications. It has its own SD card, so you could record onto a micro SD card, but you don't need to. I don't have one in here. And I can get notifications and have up to two weeks of video
yep.
for free using Amazon's S3.
Yep.
So I think all in all,
that's cost effective.
$30 with no subscription
fee. That's cost effective.
It's cheap enough, you might get a few.
Yeah.
Doesn't work well outdoors, I'm sure, because it's got, it's got a little motor in here.
No, you need a specific outdoor camera
yeah.
if you want to use it outdoors.
And it is, I mean, you can hear. So we told Jeff Jarvis, because he has a cat that keeps missing the litter box, and he wanted to know what was going on, and he wanted a camera. We told him to get this, but he said the noise of the gears as it's turning was loud enough to scare the cat, and the cat no longer uses the litter box at all. So that was not exactly the outcome we intended. But you can, it's on now. You can kind of hear it. It's not really loud. I wouldn't put it in your bedroom.
It's not. I would not put a camera in my bedroom.
Who's going to do that anyway? This, you leave it in your office or your vacation home or your living room or whatever. I mean, we've had an advertiser, Lighthouse, that makes a much more expensive, $100 camera, and you have to pay a subscription fee. Nest IQ, same thing. This for $30 does all of that and no subscription fee. So that's right now my recommendation. Does require a 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi connection. Will not work on 5. Somebody was saying he didn't like it that it'll only do one notification every 5 minutes. But most cameras do that. If it did a notification every time it saw motion, it would just keep sending you notifications. So it waits.
That's what my Nest does.
Yeah. Right. That's not good.
Which is why now they want you to gravitate towards the face ID or the Nest Cam IQs because
right.
they do the face recognition.
Right.
So then you only get a notification when it sees a face, which means you can store faces on it.
Does it work?
Yes, it works impeccably.
Okay.
And if somebody's at the door, it'll read it out through Google Home.
It says who it is.
Yeah, you kind of understand why it's worth so much money, but then you think about, my gosh, this is so much money. It's a lot of money for the Nest ecosystem. Logitech is another good ecosystem of security cameras that work with, they're actually the Wirecutter's number one pick for wireless security cameras, but not as
$30.
Cheap. $30.
Now, it doesn't have face recognition. And I'll tell you, I had to turn off motion alerts. It was in my office, and there's a monitor in my office showing the shows, and it keeps thinking that's somebody in my office moving around. So it's not smart in terms of, but it sees motion of any kind, it's going to alert you. But you just don't point at a TV set, or I mean, it's up to you in that case. I love it. You can say where it looks, how often, how fast it moves.
You can talk to your pet through it.
You, oh yeah, I
or your kids if they're going into the box of ho-hos.
Get out of those ho-hos.
Yes, get out of the ho-hos.
Anyway, WYZE, Wise Cam Pan. Florence, so good to see you. Tuesdays, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Midnight UTC. You can watch Florence and the gang, Ron Richards and Jason L. on All About Android. You've been doing a great job there.
On Know How.
Starting next month.
Yep.
Know How IoT.
July 5th. Join us.
July 5th, the day after the 4th.
Yes. Join us on your hangover.
One day before the 6th.
Megan and I will tell you all about the smart home for 12 glorious weeks.
Can't wait. That's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you, Florence.
Thank you, Leo.
Thank you, everybody, for being here. We do this show every Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. I think that's 2200 UTC. If you want to watch in the studio, we had a nice studio audience today. You just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. Where'd Ellen go? She ran out, huh? Ellen will be back. Alan and Ellen are visiting Michael. Please, we'd love to have you. If you're going to watch live, you just go to twit.tv/live. We've got a live stream now on Microsoft's Mixer. It looks good on Mixer, too, mixer.com/twit, as well as Ustream and YouTube and Twitch. And if you do watch the live stream, please hang out in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. Bunch of great, crazy kids. They're crazy in there, and it's a lot of fun. If you can't watch live, we have on-demand audio and video of everything we do on our website, twit.tv, in this case, twit.tv/NSS, or use Google Podcasts or Pocket Cast or Stitcher or iTunes or whatever you use, and you subscribe, and that way, the minute this show's ready, it'll be downloaded to your device for your delectation, audio and video. Don't forget, there's a lot of video in this show. It's a very visual show. If you want to subscribe to our newsletter, that's at twit.tv/newsletter. If you want to get our merch, we've got mugs and T-shirts and hats. That's twit.tv/store. And that's all for this show. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on the New Screensavers. Bye-bye.
And that's all, folks. Waiting for Bugs Bunny.